Okay, welcome back everyone to our third week of the Shirim here in the Angels of Woodmere. We discussed in the last 2 weeks some of the initial topics regarding coffee, tea, hot drinks, things of that nature. We spoke the first week about whether it's mutter even to drink coffee in the first place, caffeinated items. We spoke about also if it's mutter to drink before davening. We came out with some heterim, we came out with some limitations depending on who you ask. Last week we spent a chunk of the time talking about the bracha on coffee. We started with the premise, obviously, that we knew what our answer was going to be. We knew it was going to be shakel. After all, that's what we see all the time. But we wanted to understand why it wasn't actually ha'etz. If it comes from a coffee bean, if it's made in the specific way that it is made, if it's produced, mass-produced the coffee bean for the purpose of coffee, why isn't it ha'etz? We spent a large chunk of time that. We spoke about chocolate. We're moving forward in our coffee and drink in Yanim. So I wanted to talk tonight, even though we got out of the thick of things with the bracha rishona on coffee, that we said it's really a shakel, not a ha'etz, we're not in the clear totally in terms of hilchos brachas, because coffee and tea, drinks like that, are very interesting in different ways as well. First of all, they're interesting in that you drink them very slowly, which is different than any other drink. That says something about the nature of the drink. It also says something in terms of hilchos brachos, which hopefully we'll discuss first. The second thing is what the title, I guess, really represents over here, is that the coffee and tea and the like are drinks that you take on the go. They're drinks that you take on the run. Things that you take on when you're walking, when you're driving, when you're leaving the house, when you're leaving the office, wherever you're going. So you oftentimes take a coffee, take a tea, hot, cold, whatever it might be, and you drink it in that way. So that presents issues in terms of walking around with drinks and making brachas. There's makoros in the middle if you want, and things of that nature. So I'd like to discuss that as well.
Or in a few cases, doing it right during the middle of davening.
During the middle of davening. So we actually, that also we touched on the first week when you...
But I wasn't.
Yeah, but that we spoke about also, that maybe there may be some issues with drinking coffee during davening, that's true, so we'll have to go back to that to discuss. We have a long discussion ahead of us, me and you. We have to fill each other in on some things from 2 weeks ago, but this is just another topic. So we want to talk about that. And the third thing that we won't get to, we want to talk about drinking coffee at the end of the meal, whether hamotzi covers it, whether wine, your kiddush on Shabbos would cover it. That's something maybe we'll come back to in a future week. And there is a last topic that if you look in the source sheet on page 2, you'll see is an interesting topic about Birchas Areach, about making a bracha on the smell of coffee, in that it's an interesting drink in that way that it has a very strong aroma. So hopefully we can talk about at least a few of these things if we can get anywhere. We'll get close to doing all of that. And the Mitzvah Shembli Nether will cover some of these interesting topics. Okay, so let's start with first things first. Bracha Rishona and Bracha Achrona, the first source on the source sheet. So the Gemara in Brachos says, and this is in source number 1, the Gemara in Brachos on Daf Lamed Hey says that there's a stira, there's a contradiction between two psukim in the Torah in Nach that the Gemara brings to light. First of all, the pasuk says La Hashem Haaretz Umeloa, that the land and everything in the land belongs to Hashem. That's one pasuk. The other pasuk says V'haaretz nasan levnei Adam, right? We say this in Tehillim, we say that in Hallel, that the land, the aretz, was given to bnei Adam, to human beings. So is l'Hashem ha'aretz umeloa, is the whole world, there's makoshes on the beam if you want, is the whole world belonging to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, l'Hashem ha'aretz umeloa, or is it the exact opposite? Is it really true that ha'aretz nasan levnei Adam, that really the land was given to the people? Which one is it? Is it Hashem's land? Is it our land? Is it your land? Yeah, you got it? Okay. So which one is it? So the Gemara says this is no stira, this is no contradiction. In fact, it's a very simple answer. Kan lefneshim avarech, kan la'achash abirech. Meaning, if a person does not make a bracha on his food, then it's not his food. It's Hashem's food. The whole world belongs to him. Everything that's produced by the land belongs to him, to the capital H, him, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Unless you make a bracha, you have no right to eat from it. When you make a bracha, then it's v'ha'aretz nasan levnei Adam. Once you acknowledge la'ashem ha'aretz umeloa, once you acknowledge the rulership and the ownership of HaKadosh Baruch Hu of God, and you make a bracha, and you, so to speak, request permission in a certain sense to take part of his produce, to take part of his aretz, then it belongs to you. Only after the bracha. That's what the Gemara says. So what happens if you eat food without making a bracha rishona? What happens if you eat that food and you don't ask permission? You don't request that you should eat from it. You don't say Baruch Atah Hashem. You don't acknowledge his ownership, his rulership. So what's the din? What have you done? Says the Gemara three different things that are very similar. One of them is that it says, Kol ha'nenem in ha'olam hazeh, the underlines below bracha, ma'al. Ma'al means that a person gets benefit, takes, without permission, kachim. Holy items from the Beis HaMikdash, he gets hana from them without the proper permission. He's out of place when he does so. That's mi'ila. That's stealing, so to speak, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says the Gemara even stronger, or more pointed for our purpose, the bold and the underline in the bottom of source number 1. Amrei b'chinim b'rapapa kol ha'nenem in ha'olam hazeh b'lo bracha, ki'ilu gozel HaKadosh Baruch Hu k'nesses Yisrael. It's as if he stole from Hashem. and Knesset Yisrael, but let's focus on the first part. It's as if he stole from a Kaddish Baruch Hu. It is considered gezela. It is considered stealing to eat food without making a bracha rishona. That is what comes out as Gemara. Some of the Achronim have a very good time with this Gemara. The fact that the Gemara compares eating food without a bracha to gezela, there I'm quoting on the Bima if you would like. The fact that the Gemara compares eating food without a bracha to gezela, the Achronim really go far places with this. One Achron, Rav Shlomo Kluger, I did not look this up before we were given the shir because I cannot find it. I believe I once saw it in one of the writings of Rav Avadya Yosef, but if I did, it was a few years ago, and I have not been able to locate it since. So if it's not there, then it's a bogus, but if it's there, it's a collector's item. So he wants to know the following thing. The Gemara in Psachim on Daf Lamed Ches has a gzera shava, has a connection between two psukim. It says that we have the word lechem by matzah, and we have the word lechem by, I believe, challah. Those two dinim have the word lechem in the pasuk. So what's the connection between these two dinim, besides the fact that they both involve bread, which is why it probably says lechem? Says the Gemara that you need lachem, meaning you need that it be your matzah. The same way you need it to be your challah. To take challah, you need to own the matzah that you're eating at the Seder night. Meaning, matzah gezula, matzah that is stolen, is not able to be consumed as mitzvah's matzah on the Seder night, on Pesach. That is what the Gemara seems to say. What about matzah she'ula? What if you borrowed matzah? Doesn't belong to you either, so how does that work? So that's a big discussion, because we might have an issue, because anyone who's eating at someone else's house, even maybe a son who comes home to his father's house for a meal on a Seder night, so you didn't really buy the matzahs. Or in some cases, you may have bought the matzahs and you haven't paid yet, or something like that. So it does get a little sticky, figuring out exactly how to eat your matzah while owning it, having your matzah and eating it too. That's a little bit of a difficult riddle. But nonetheless, for sure what is clear is that matzah gezula, stolen matzah, is not able to be used as the mitzvah of achilas matzah on Pesach night. Says Rav Shlomo Kluger, if so, I have a question. Let's say a person comes to the Seder. He sits down, he's wearing his gartel, he went to the mikvah, he read all the words beforehand in the Haggadah, he's all excited for his mitzvah matzah, he's very into it, he has all the kavanos, he sits down for the matzah, and he makes Makoros sheets are on the bima, he makes a bracha on the mitzvah of achilas matzah, but he forgets to make a hamotzi, he forgets to make a berechas hanen, and a bracha before he eats the matzah. We know when you eat bread, when you eat matzah, when you eat anything, you need to make a bracha rishona, and he forgets to do so. Says Rav Shlomo Kluger, was he yotzei? On the one hand, all he did was forget to make a berachas hananin, but on the other hand, says the Gemara, kol hananim and olam bezeh below bracha, if you don't make a bracha on your food before you eat it, ki'ilu gozel. It's as if you made a gzela. And matzah gezula, says Rav Shlomo Kluger, we know from the Gemara, is not able to be used for a mitzvah on Pesach night. So now do you have this issue of matzah gezula on the Pesach night if you forgot to make a bracha? I don't think his maskana is that you weren't yotzei, but he does take the Gemara at face value, at least to ask the question. Another place, in Shulchan Aruch Yerodeh Shin Mem Aleph, Sif Aleph, that's Hilchos Aninus. Hilchos Aninus is basically about the following thing. If a person loses a relative, Rachman al-Islam, he loses a parent, a sibling, whatever it might be. So until that relative is buried, the person is in a state of Aninus. He's in a state of pre-mourning. Before the body is actually buried, he's in a place of mourning called Aninus. Aninus is funny, not really, in that way. Sorry, lighten up everyone. Aninus is a funny din in that it presents an interesting state for a person. A person is no longer allowed to do mitzvos. When he's an onein, he's not allowed to perform any mitzvos, and he's not allowed to make any brachos, says the Shulchan Aruch. This is coming from Gemaras in brachos. He's not allowed to do any mitzvos, and he's not allowed to make any brachos. Why not? What's the reason for that? So there are really two reasons given. Maybe it's a bit Bavli versus Yerushalmi. One reason is that it's osik b'mitzvah, patur b'mitzvah. You're supposed to be taking part in burying the mace. There's a big mitzvah on you to do kvura, to take care of the relative that is dead before you. This obviously has nafkaminas when we have a chever kadisha that takes care of all the burials. So does that change things? That's something to talk about. But anyways, onin is patur for mitzvahs because he's osik b'mitzvah, patur min mitzvah. He's busy in this mitzvah kvura, so he no longer has to do other mitzvos that are outside of the mitzvah of taking care of his deceased relative. The other option is that maybe it's just disrespectful to the mace. You have a person sitting here before you, lying lifeless, and you're supposed to be showing the utmost kavod to this person, and you're off focusing on other things, even though they're holy things. They're a Kaddish Baruch Hu thing. Says a Kaddish Baruch Hu, I'm mevater on my kavod, be mechabed the mace, be mechabed the deceased. Don't do mitzvos instead of tending to my needs, says the mace, I guess. Says a Kaddish Baruch Hu about the mace, don't do mitzvos without tending to the needs of the mace. Rav Soloveitchik offered a third, more drash-oriented pshat. It's in the book called Out of the Whirlwind, in the first chapter. I don't have the vocabulary or the audacity, which is, I guess, vocabulary, to say it over here. But if you want to look in the first chapter of that book, you'll find a very interesting idea about this. But we have this idea of aninus, that a person doesn't do mitzvos and does not make brachos when he is in a state of aninus before the burial. So, what about the following case? A person's relative, Rachman Litzlan, just passed away, and he wants to sit down and eat a little bit. Now, you shouldn't eat too much. A person should not really have a meal while he's waiting for a kfura. He shouldn't really, but he needs a little chizuk. He can't get up and walk to the funeral. He can't gather himself together without having a little snack, a little something to eat. So now he wants to eat. So should he make a bracha rishona? So what do you say? Right, so the Shulchan Aruch says no. You did not make a bracha rishona. But say the Achronim, Rav Avadja quotes Achronim will say this, the Rav asked this question, Rabbi Akiva Eger asked this question, the Maharil Diskin asked this question. There's a lot of people talked about this. What about the following issue? It's true that you're not supposed to do mitzvos. It's true that you're not supposed to make brachos. But does it say anywhere that an onin can do averos? Can you go rob a bank? Can you go eat treif? No, certainly not. So here we have in our hands a mitzvah to make a bracha, that's true, and we're saying don't make brachos, but what happens if you eat without making a bracha? Say the Achronim, isn't it gezela? Isn't it this isser of gezela? Say the Achronim, this Gemara just told us that eating without a bracha is stealing, it's gezela, it's geneva, you're stealing from Hashem. So how could it be that the Shulchan Aruch tells you, don't make a bracha before you eat when you're an onein, if that's also doing an avera at the very same time? So the Achronim all answer in their own ways. The basic answer is as follows, is that the mitzvah of brachos is what makes it into an iser gezela. Meaning, it's not an iser gezela to partake of the food of this world without a bracha. But once Chazal said to make a bracha, if you don't do that, then it's gezela. So in this case, they're telling you, don't make a bracha. They're saying, please, take this food without making a bracha, so it's no longer gezela. But here, too, you see in this vein that the Gemara is taken to face value by the Achronim, really to be used in this direction, that it really is a gezela. Even if in the halacha is that you would not make a bracha rishona, the halacha is that you maybe would be yotzi your mitzvah's matzah, but still, the Achronim took this very seriously, that the Gemara really compares it to gezela. So that's what the Gemara says about making a bracha rishona. What the other thing that comes out of this Gemara is that there is no minimum requirement, there is no shear, there is no basic level of food that's mechayiv you in a bracha. Namely, if I want to eat a big meal, I have to make a bracha rishona. If I want to eat a little meal, I also have to make a bracha rishona. If I want to take a nibble, a bite, I also have to make a bracha rishona. The Gemara says, kol hanena min ha'olam hazeh. Anyone who gets any level of hana'ah, who gets any benefit, whose palate benefits from this world, already has to make a bracha, regardless of how much food he actually consumes. That is paskin here in source number 2, to the left of number 1, in Shulchan Aruch, in Reish Yud Sif Aleph. In Or HaChaim, that is the halacha that you don't have any minimum shear for achila, for eating and for drinking. And the Mishnah Berurah says, look at our Gemara, that's the source. Kol ananem and olam hazeh below bracha ki ilu gazel ki ilu ma'al. That's why there's no minimum for a bracha rishona. Good. So that is the first din. But the Shulchan Aruch in the very same sif in source number 2 says, if a person ate pachos mikazayis, he ate less than a kazayis of food, ate less than the minimum amount of food, v'ashoz pachos mirevius, and he drank less than a revius. Certainly, he makes a bracha rishona, but says in the bold, the Shulchan Aruch, ula acharav eino mevarech klal, says the Shulchan Aruch, afterwards, he would not make a bracha achrona. Whereas, you do make a bracha rishona on food you eat less than a kazayis, or on drinks that you eat less than a revius, you do not make a bracha achrona if you ate that little food. Now, what are food and what are drinks? So, that sounds like a silly question. It is somewhat a silly question. It's usually easy to define what's a food, what's a drink. We saw last week a little bit of a place to talk about whether certain drinks are actually more considered like foods. Remember we said, what did we say? We said whiskey was maybe more of a food than a beverage. We said soup is really a food, not a beverage. So there are some gray areas. Another gray area is ices, ice cream, ice, those type of things, where at the state they are right now, they certainly are solid, they certainly are edible in that sense. But on the other hand, the second they go into a person's mouth, they melt down to their basic liquid state. So is that considered a food or a drink? That is a big tumult in the Achronim, in the Poskim. You have to ask a Rav about that. Rav Shlomo Zalman thought that ice is ice cream. Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg as well thought that ice cream, all those things are actually considered a food. I think I once heard Rav Willig say that he could have a whole meal based on ice cream, and therefore it's obviously a food. And if you say that, then for sure the shear would be a kazayas. For sure it would be a kazayas because it's a food. And Rav Avadja, we'll see a tshuva later on. Rav Avadja says that maybe these type of cold but frozen liquids that became a solid are really still considered a drink. Interesting machlokas, but either way, whatever you define as food or drink, so a drink needs a revius, it needs a minimum shear of a revius in order to be mechayiv you in a bracha achrona. If you drink less than that, you will not make a bracha achrona. What is a revius? What is that? What's the measurement of a revius? This is also a very big machlokas in the achronim. In source number 3, you see the Mishnah Berurah gives us a very unhelpful definition. The Mishnah Berurah says it is 1.5 kibetzim. Shkayach. Thank you. So what in the world does that mean? That a Revius measures out to 1.5 kibetzim. What's he telling me over there? So what's the shear? So there's no way I wouldn't want to really give a shear on this right now. It's pretty technical and mathematic and all that. But it's not really my forte either. But the Achronim basically boil down to the following three groups. The Grach Nae, who's a famous famous posik about shiurim in general, about measurements in general, he says that a revius is 3 ounces. That's the smallest shear you'll basically find mainstream. The Chaznish had the biggest shear mainstream, which was 5.3 ounces. So now we have 3 and 5.3. And Rav Moshe Feinstein is quoted by his son Rav David Feinstein in the Haggadah on Pesach that it's really 3.3 ounces. Just a 0.3 ounce difference between that and Grach Nae. But basically somewhere between 3 and 5 ounces, that's your revius. So says the Shulchan Aruch, with the help of some of these achronim that we've helped define, if you have a food that you can define as a food, if you eat a kezias, you certainly make a bracha rishona, that makes no difference how much you ate, and you also make a bracha achrona. If you have a drink and you're able to define it as such, not in the gray area, something that's clearly a drink, water, something like that, and you drink enough of it, then you would also make a bracha achrona. Enough is a revius. A revius we're defining as basically 3.3 ounces according to Rav Moshe Feinstein. That is where we're holding in terms of Hilchos Brachos as of now. But the Mishnah Berurah brings up a very important point over here, and that is that it's not just about the amount of drink that you drink. It's not just about the amount of drink that you consume in order to make a bracha achrona. It is also about the time in which you consume it. Namely, if you drink a revius of beverage, even if you drink that much, but you drink it too slowly, you didn't drink it in the requisite amount of time, the small amount of time that you're given, then you don't make a bracha achrona either. If it's spread out too far, you don't make a bracha achrona. So in order to understand this concept, let's back up. Let's go back into a different topic and give a background to where in the world this comes from. The Pesukim Parshas Emor tell us, Shabbat Shabbaton tiye lachem, whatever, hi lachem, v'inisem esnaf shoseichem, me'erev ad erev tishbezu shabbatachem. My bar mitzvah parasha, I still mess it up. Okay. But anyways, there's a mitzvah in the Torah of inui, of, I guess literally we can say, afflicting oneself, torturing oneself on Yom Kippur. The Gemara in Yuma on Ayin Dalet Amud Beis says, it doesn't mean to torture yourself. It doesn't mean that you should actually actively hurt yourself, afflict yourself in any way. Says the Gemara, it does not mean that you should sit outside on a hill on a sunny day on Yom Kippur and bake in the sun in order to torture and afflict yourself. It doesn't mean that you should roll over in a bed of nails on Yom Kippur. That's not what the Pasuk means. The Pasuk means, b'shevi al taisa, passively, we observe, we refrain from certain things in order that we should be afflicted. What are those certain things? Says the Mishnah, one daf earlier in Yuma, says the Mishnah, there are 5 isurim, 5 inuyim that come out on Yom Kippur, and this is obviously very shaykh to what's coming up Tisha B'Av, because we learn the similar 5 things from here. That's achila and shsiya, eating and drinking, rechitza, washing oneself, wearing sandals, wearing shoes, sicha, anointing oneself with oil, smearing himself with oil, and tashmish hamita. All those 5 things are usher on Yom Kippur as a form of inoy, as a form of affliction that we're supposed to observe on Yom Kippur. So achila. How much do you have to eat in order to be chayiv kares, in order to have been over on this isser, have been chayiv kares on Yom Kippur? How much do you have to eat? So says the Mishnah, kikosevas hagasa, which is not exactly a kezias, it's a little less than a kibetzah, I believe. Might be off on that, but it's a different shear. But that's how much you have to eat on Yom Kippur in order to be chayiv, and how much you have to drink on Yom Kippur to be chayiv, says the Mishnah, malei lugmav, malo lugmav, that a person has to drink a cheekful. The poskim tell us from the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch tell us that it doesn't mean that you literally have to fill your whole cheek. It means that if you drink enough, that if you push to the side, your cheek would bulge out a little bit, so that already shows that you drank enough to be chayiv kares on Yom Kippur. Okay, very interesting. So different shir than achila. So says the Rambam, a very interesting din, this is in the Makoros, I believe, source number 5, says the Rambam that it's not enough to drink that much liquid. It's not enough to drink that much beverage on Yom Kippur to be chayiv kares. Rather, you have to drink it in a certain amount of time. Says the Rambam, if you ate very slowly, you ate a little bit here, a little bit there, you ended up eating the shear, you ended up eating enough, but you ate it very slowly, it took you a long time to consume all that food. So would you be chayiv kari? Says the Rambam, if it took you longer than kidei achilas pras, if it took you longer than the normal amount of time it takes to eat a pras, to eat a certain amount of bread, says the Rambam, you would not be chayiv kares on Yom Kippur. That is accepted. And that time period is probably somewhere between 2 and 9 minutes, which is a very long range. We generally assume about 4 minutes. So on Yom Kippur, if you want to be, you have to be more machmir on certain things, you'll wait 9 minutes if you have a heter to eat. So this is not always so simple. That's why I give you the range of 2 to 9. But generally, kidei achilas pras is 4 minutes. So if a person eats his bread, his food, or whatever on Yom Kippur in longer than Kedeya Achilas Pras, longer than that time span, he's not Chayiv Karis on Yom Kippur. Says the Rambam, an interesting din, the underline over here, Shasa Me'at, in Surah number 5. Shasa Me'at, Vishasa, He drank a little bit, and he stopped. Then he drank a little bit, then he stopped. He drank a little more. Im yesh mitchilas shi'a rishona, if from the beginning of his drinking, ad sof shi'a achrona, until the very end, is kedesh shi'as revias, is the amount of time that it takes to drink a revias, is some time span, some minimum time span of kedesh shi'as revias, mitstarfin l'shir v'imlav in mitstarfin. If he drinks in that amount of time, then it joins together, it counts as a shi'a, and you are chayiv kares on Yom Kippur. If, however, you drink for longer than that amount of time, you drink a little, you stop, you drink a little, you stop, it takes you 10 minutes to drink your 3 ounces, says the Rambam, you're not Chayiv Karis on Yom Kippur. What in the world is Kedesh Shi'as Revias? What is that time period? So that is also a major discussion in the Achronim, how exactly to define that. There's Mishnah Berurahs in different places that sound different than each other. It's very difficult to figure out. The basic rule, as outlined by the later Svarim, is that it's the normal amount of time it takes to drink a Revias. Now, some people it could take... Most people won't take this much, it'll probably take more than this, but some people could take one gulp to drink a revias, some people two, three gulps. So it's not about the gulps, because it could take different people different amounts of time. It's about, let's say it was two gulps, a normal amount of time, without breaking. Namely, if you could drink the revias with the cup to your lips, and you take two, three gulps, four gulps, it doesn't matter how many gulps you take, but you never remove the glass from your lips, you never stop, you never have a hefsek, you never break in that action, it takes you that time, but you don't break in the action, that is Kedesh Shi'as Revias. So it's hard to define in terms of numbers, in terms of seconds, but that is basically the idea, multiple gulps with no break. So that brings up an interesting question, what about drinking with a straw? If a person wants to drink a revias of drink with a straw on Yom Kippur, so would he be Chayiv Karis on Yom Kippur? He drank a revias, but it took him 5 minutes to get that much up through the straw. So what happens then? So the Be'er Halacha says, this is in source number 6 on the bottom, the Be'er Halacha says that in such a case he would not be chayiv, he would be pater from kares, because it took him too long to drink the drink on Yom Kippur, and others disagree. We'll get back to that hopefully soon. But anyways, the Rambam says there's an idea of kedesh shi'as revias, of drinking a drink in a certain amount of time in order to be chayiv on Yom Kippur. Otherwise, you'd be potter. That's what the Rambam tells us. The Ravid disagrees. In source number 5 on the left side, the Ravid disagrees and says that when it comes to eating, you have to eat within a kedesh achilas pras in order to be chayiv on Yisurim, in order to be chayiv on Yom Kippur and other Yisurim, you have to eat within Achilas Pras, that amount of time, whatever it is, 4 minutes we said before, something like that. But, says the Ravid, for Shasiyah, for drinking, there is no minimum shir. Actually, the minimum shir is the same as eating, which is Kedei Achilas Pras. Namely, it's not different. If you want to drink and it takes you 4 minutes to drink the Revias, you would still be chayiv on Yom Kippur. A big chumrah, says the Ravid, you would still be chayiv karis on Yom Kippur, even though it took you longer than the normal amount of time to drink a Revias. It took you 4 minutes, 3 minutes, 6 minutes, whatever it might have taken, so you're still chayiv karis on Yom Kippur, according to the Ravid. This is a machlokas Rambam Ravid. The Vilna Gaon assumes like the Ravid. There are achronim who assume that way. But if you look in Shulchan Aruch, in source number 6, that's Tafresh Yud Beis Sif Yud, in Hilchos Yom Kippur, the Shulchan Aruch quotes both the Rambam and the Ravid. The Shulchan Aruch starts with the Rambam. He says that the halacha is that you have to drink a revias within the time of Kedesh Shi'as Revias. Otherwise, you're not chayiv. And then he says, V'yesh Omrim, some people say, the Ravid, that you are not chayiv, that you are chayiv even if it took you a little bit longer, if it took you Kedei Achilas Pras. Usually the rule in Shulchan Aruch, this is important to know for the future, usually the rule in Shulchan Aruch is that he has two deos, he has two opinions in Shulchan Aruch. First, he quotes anonymously, stam. He doesn't say any person who he's quoting. He just says the halacha is such. Then he says, v'yesh omrim. Some people say as follows, stam v'yesh. First a stam, no name. Then yesh. He quotes some people, yesh omrim. We always follow the first opinion. Almost always. We usually follow the first opinion. This is no exception. It seems like the Shulchan Aruch is passing like a Rambam, that by drinks, on Yom Kippur at least, if you drink longer than Kedesh Shi'as Revias, even if you drink a Revias, you would not be chayiv karis on Yom Kippur. Now, what does this have to do with us at all? What does it do with us at all? We're talking about Yisurim, we're talking about Yom Kippur, what does that have to do with us? Says the Mishnah Berurah, in source number 4, there are achronim, there are poskim who say that the same thing applies to Birchas Hanen. In the same way that by Yisurim, by doing Yisurim, by drinking when you're not allowed to drink, by drinking on Yom Kippur, for example, the same way they have to drink in a certain minimum amount of time in order to be chayiv, so too by brachos, so too by the halachos of making brachos, of bracha achrona, you have to drink the revias in a certain amount of time in order to be chayiv to make a bracha achrona. If you drink a drink that is a revias large, you drink that much, you drink 3.3 ounces, you drink 4 ounces, you drink 5 ounces, but you never drink that much within the small amount of time of Kedesh Shi'as Revias, it took you 8 minutes, 10 minutes, 11 minutes, whatever it took you to drink the drink, Says the Mishnah Berurah from some of the Achronim that that applies in our case as well, and you would not be chayiv in a bracha achrona. Very important din, obviously, because like we said before, the Be'er Halacha wanted to know if you could be chayiv karis if you drink out of a straw on Yom Kippur. You could be chayiv karis. You drink a revius, but it took you 8 minutes to drink the revius. You chayiv karis. So says the Be'er Halacha, no. Over here, if we applied that, that would mean that if a person was drinking his, whatever, iced coffee, orange juice, whatever, out of a straw, and he drank a revius. He did drink that much, but it took him 8 minutes. It took him 10 minutes. Says the Be'er Halacha, you wouldn't be chayiv in a bracha achrona either. The same way you wouldn't be chayiv karis on Yom Kippur, you would not be allowed, because once you're not supposed to, you're not allowed to make a bracha achrona after that drinking, since it took you too long. That is the background to this idea of kadesh tis revius, that it's not just about a shear and amount, it's also about time. If you turn the page over, you'll see that this has very important ramifications for our topic, because what is the nature of drinking a hot drink, a coffee, a tea, by the way, also a cold drink, like a iced coffee, where you're drinking with a straw, or you're drinking it with your mouth, but there's a lot of ice cubes, and you're never going to get so much down so fast. So it's true, your cup of coffee, sach hakol, the whole cup of coffee, it has a revius, it has much more than a revius, it has a lot of coffee, you got the jumbo size, you got the big size coffee, but it's going to take you, what, 5, 10, depending on the person, 15 minutes to drink a revius, to drink just 3.3 ounces, it would take you a whole bunch of time. You sit there sipping on your hot coffee, your hot tea, or your cold coffee, your cold tea. So how do we go about bracha achrona when it comes to coffee and tea? Do we ever have to make a bracha achrona when we drink coffee and tea? I think most people here probably assumed that there is a bracha achrona on coffee and tea. If you didn't, then great, you're mechavim to the question, but not so great when we get the answers. But how can we have this case, a bracha achrona on something that we drink so slowly? So as you see over here lined up, basically, four approaches in the Gedolei Achronim that are brought down. There probably are more, but these are the ones that I'm aware of. In Aleph, in 7 Aleph, I guess it is. So Rav Avadya, in his Tshuvas Yabia Omer, he quotes an interesting suggestion by one of the Achronim. I think it was the Minchas Hachag. Yeah, not really familiar with who it is, but he quotes the Minchas Hachag, who has an interesting suggestion. The Minchas Hachag suggests that a person, when he sits down to drink his coffee, so he knows he's going to have a suffix brachos. He knows he's not going to know how to make a bracha achrona. Says this achron, actually, very interestingly, he actually has a suffix brachos on his bracha rishona also, because it's not so clear that in a coffee should be a shakel. Maybe it should be a eitz, maybe something else. So he really has a lot of suffix brachos here. He doesn't know what bracha to make. He doesn't know a bracha achrona. So what does he do? So says this achron, he should take with him also a glass of water. And when he sits down, he should make a shakel on the glass of water, drink a little bit, just to patur the brachos, just to make a shakel. And he'll drink a revius of the water very quickly. Then he could enjoy his coffee or tea as long as he wants. As he could sit, he could chill with it, he could have a cigar, whatever he does. He could do his normal routine and take as long as you want. And you can make your bracha achrona because you already drank a revius of water. Tov kadesh tias revius. You drink a revius of water fast enough that you're already chayiv in a bracha achrona, in a brain of fashas rabos. You already were mechayiv yourself. So that's what you should do. You should drink a little water just to help you with this brachas question. And then you can make a bracha achrona, no problem whatsoever. Is there no problem whatsoever? What did we talk about last week? Something about water? So we mentioned last week that you don't always make a shakel on water, right? We mentioned not only don't you always make a shakel, you don't always make a bracha at all on water. Says the Shulchan Aruch in what, Siman Reish Dalet, wherever it was, that we don't always make a bracha on water in a case where a person is choking, he has something stuck in his throat, or he's not thirsty at all, but he needs to clear his throat in some way, or do something like that, but he's not getting any hana, any benefit from the water whatsoever. Says the Shulchan Aruch, you don't make a shakel. It's not, you're trying to take a pill. You have no interest in drinking any water. You're not thirsty, so you take a pill. So you want to take water with it. You don't make a shakel. It's not chayiv and brachos. So here, what does this achron want us to do? He wants us to sit down to our cup of coffee, which we want to drink. And even though I don't want water, I'm not thirsty for it, I'm not going to enjoy this water, make a shakel and make a brei nefashos. It's against Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch said not to do so. So he has some answer. He thinks that maybe it's different when you're trying to use it for brachos. Maybe that's more special. Not so simple. Rav Avadya does not like that. Other Achronim don't like that because of what we just said in Siman Reish Dalet, when Shulchan Aruch told us that we don't do such things. We don't make bracha on water unless we're thirsty. So even though this could be a suggestion for someone who is thirsty for water, if he wants water and coffee, then he might be able to do this and drink quickly a water and then sit down with the coffee. But if you're not in that case, then really have issues with this approach. So we'll move on to Beis, the second thing, which if you're going, I don't know, counter, whatever, in Australia, clockwise, I don't know, whatever. So if you're in source Beis in 7, that's what we're up to now, the second approach, because we don't really like that first approach too much. In the book called Chut HaMishulash, which is a fairly long book, it's called Chut HaMishulash because it's about three Gedolim. It's about the Chassam Sofer, Bikiv Eger, and The Ksav Sofer, Rabbi Akiva Eger's son, they were all family. The Ksav Sofer was originally married to somebody, and then she was Niftaris. I believe his second wife, if not it was his third, but I think his second wife was Rabbi Akiva Eger's daughter. In fact, the interesting story about that also in that book is that when the Shidduch was first ret, they first suggested the Shidduch, so the Ksav Sofer was suffering from the loss of his wife. And the people from the town over came over and said, you know, we have an amazing shidduch for you, the Chassam Sofer, the Gadol Hador's daughter, Rabbi Akiva Eger's daughter. So the Chassam Sofer says, I have nothing wrong with the shidduch, I just feel bad, I don't think Rabbi Akiva Eger wants the Naam Aretz for a son-in-law. So they said, okay. So they went to Rabbi Akiva Eger and they said, we have a gevalda shidduch for you, the Chassam Sofer, for your daughter, what do you think? And he said, it's gevaldik, but I don't think the Chassam Sofer wants such an Naam Aretz for a father-in-law. So the guy said, with such amaratzim, I'm sure you guys will make great mechadanim. So they did get married, in fact. Anyways, now they have a book written about them, so it worked out. So in this book, they say that the Ksam Sofer, every morning, actually had his shamish, used to bring him every single morning in order that he should wake himself up and be rejuvenated for the day of learning. He'd have coffee and a little piece of cake. And it doesn't say how little a piece of cake was, but he would have coffee and cake in the morning every day. I think there's a story there that one time the shamish forgot to bring the cake. The whole maisa there that the Chassam Sofer got angry at him. He said, well, you care? You don't care about the Gashmias? He said, yeah, but I'm missing brachos. I don't know, whatever. I couldn't find it when I was looking for it. But anyways, I think it's there somewhere. But he used to drink coffee and have cake in the morning every single day. Why in the world are we talking about this? Oh, yeah. So what did he do? So if he drank coffee, what did he do? Did he make a bracha achrona? So says the Maharam Shik, who was the foremost Talmud, or one of the foremost Talmudim of the Chassam Sofer. They both have the name Moshe, and there was a lot of puns about that. Also, the Chassam Sofer suggested his daughter for a shidduch for Moshe Shik, the Maharam Shik, his foremost Talmud, and the Maharam Shik said, but my name is Moshe and your name is Moshe, isn't there a Yehuda Chassid that we shouldn't get married to each other's family members because we have the same name? So the Chassam Sofer said, I don't care, but you ruin the shidduch because you care. So that, a lot of shidduchim stories, okay. Anyway, so the Maharam Shik writes testimony, writes Edus, that he used to watch his Rebbe drink coffee. He used to see him drink coffee, and he saw that his Rebbe would drink it at a normal pace, and he would make a bracha achrona afterwards. And lest you think that the Chassam Sofer drank his coffee lukewarm, it's not true, because also in that biography of the Chassam Sofer, in a different place, they say that the Chassam Sofer actually drank his coffee so hot that the doctors told him to stop. And he did so because he didn't want to get any benefit from this world. He was such a parish, he was so separate from all the inyani olam hazeh, all the gashmis of this world, that he didn't want to get hana from a drink of coffee, he didn't want to get hana from a hot bath. He would make his water so hot in the bath, so hot in the coffee, that he couldn't really enjoy it. So he was drinking pretty hot coffee. So he must have been drinking it pretty slow. And says the Maharam Shik, I saw him make a bracha achrona. And that's what I do, and that's what the source, not me, the Maharam Shik, and that's what the source number Beis, the Malamed Lahovel, quotes, that the Minchas Chinuch and the Shalom Meshiv, all of these gedolim, they would drink their coffee at a normal pace. They would drink their hot coffee very slowly, very normally, and yet they would still make a bracha achrona. They would still make a brain of fashos, even though they went out of that time zone, out of that time span. Yeah.
Charlie, in this subdivision, you say normal way of drinking.
Ah.
What?
What does that mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
What is a normal
that's
way
a,
of drinking?
That is a great question. So I think the answer is as follows. How did we come to the shear of Kadesh Shasias Revias? How did we come to the shear, to the minimum shear of the amount of time it takes to drink a Revias? So we said, after all the tumult in the Achronim, what it boils down to is, what's the normal way to get a Revias down? What's the normal amount of time it takes? It's not measured in gulps. It's measured in the process. How long, what's the normal way of drinking this Revias? So these Achronim, this is one way to interpret it, it's not the only way. These Achronim understood that a coffee, the way you drink a Revias of coffee is not by gulping it down in two gulps. That's not the way you drink a Revias of coffee. The way you drink a Revias of a hot drink, a hot coffee, a hot tea, is that you take it slowly, sip by sip. It takes you 3 minutes to drink a Revias. It takes you 4 minutes to drink a Revias. That's the normal way, so then it's still chayev in the bracha Achrona. In fact, Rav Yerachmiel Fried asked Rav Shlomo Zalman. He said, Rav Shlomo Zalman, I heard that you paskin that you should make a bracha achrona on hot drinks even if it took you longer than shtiyas revias. It took you 4 minutes. I heard you paskin that way. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, Chas v'shalom, I would never paskin against the Mishnah Berurah. It's not true. So Rav Yerachmiel Fried thought, and he said, I heard you do that, though. He said, that is true. I do against the Mishnah Berurah. He said, I was mekabel from Rav Isser Zalman Meltzer, who was mekabel from Rav Elvel Soloveitchik, who was mekabel from Chaim Soloveitchik, that Rav Chaim Soloveitchik did the same thing. If he drank his coffee and took him upwards of 2 minutes, it took him maybe 4 minutes to drink his coffee, or Revias, he would still make a bracha achrona. I tried very hard to time Rav Chaim Kanevsky drinking tea on YouTube a couple weeks ago, which is why there's not so much Torah in this year, mostly just that kind of thing. I was not successful in understanding the gulping system and all that, but some people did hold that way.
Why couldn't there just be two different shiur, one for hot, one for cold?
So that, I think that's similar to what we're saying here, is that exactly, is that a cold drink, the normal way to drink a cold drink, the shear is going to be whatever it is, 3 seconds.
That's not what they seem to be saying. Nobody seems to say that.
I think that's the pshat in that guy who wrote in the English on top, normal way of drinking, is that the pshat he's trying to say is that these achronim think that the normal way to drink makes it a different shear. It's just there's the normal way to drink cold drinks is faster, 2 gulps without taking a break, 3 gulps without taking a break. The normal way to drink a hot drink is whatever, 10 sips, you know, slowly within 4 minutes or outside of 4 minutes, whatever it might be. I once talked to Rav Twersky about this, and he said Rav Twersky is a grandson from Rav Soloveitchik, and also Rav Soloveitchik lived in his home for a few years at the end of his life. So he said he saw that the Rav drank his tea very, very slowly, and the Rav made a bracha achrona. So there is a legitimate, I think we counted maybe 6, 7, 8 achronim just now, gedolim, who would do such a thing, that if this was considered the normal way of drinking the drink, so it just has a different shear, like you just phrased it, it has a different shear, it has a different minimum than a cold drink, and therefore you would make a bracha achrona regardless of the fact that you drink it, let's say it took you 4 minutes or something, so it doesn't really make a difference. There is a discussion.
This really falls into the category gim. And that's what I did.
Oh, so we'll see. Category gim is a little different, so we'll see that in a second.
Yeah. It's possible.
Maybe 2 seconds. Yeah.
The normal way to drink a drink.
Yeah. Even within one drink, you're saying. Even within coffee. Some people drink it faster, some people drink it slower.
No, but I'm talking about using a straw, for instance.
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily for hot coffee, but certainly for iced coffee.
Yeah.
Or for any large cold drinks.
Right.
I mean, does that right. make a difference?
That's not the normal way of drinking. That's a new addition of...
It may be the normal way of drinking it. I mean, since you
use, not when you're over six.
Since you use their appellation...
Yeah.
You ever buy an iced coffee from this place?
No, I would never go in there. That's next week's year. No,
okay.
Yeah. It's true. No, it is true. So whatever. So you'll have to work out the details in each case. But that's the basic two mahalchim over here. But let's say we don't like that. Let's say we don't really like that mahalch. It sounds a little strange. I don't think people have really heard of that too much, even though we have Gedolim who did it. So let's move down to the right to source Gimel in source number 7. That's the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah quotes that there were Chasidim Rishonim, what does he call them? Anshe Maisa, people who were doing good deeds all the time. Chasidim, good people, that they would have the following practice. What they would do is they would drink their coffee normally. They'd make a shakel, they'd drink their coffee normally, and then at the end they would leave over 3.3 ounces, whatever your avias is. They would leave it over, let it cool down, and chug that really quickly. So they drank very slowly. They left over this little amount over here, and they let it cool down. They drink that quickly, and in that way they were mechayev themselves in a bracha achrona, and they were able to make their bracha achrona. That is what the Shari Tshuva quotes as well, and other Ashkenazi achronim say this too. The Birka Yosef, the Chida, the Sfardi achronim do not like this. They say that it is considered batla daito etzel kol adam. Nobody drinks their coffee that way. People drink their coffee hot and fresh and normal. They don't drink it lukewarm. They don't drink it. It's gross. People don't want that. Happens to be, I don't agree. My coffee takes a long time to drink, and it's usually pretty cool by the end. They don't really bother me. But he thought that would be batla daita isakal adam. That's not the normal way of drinking. And memele, even though you drink that fast, it wouldn't be considered drinking, and you still wouldn't be chayav in a bracha achrona, and you'd be making a bracha levatala when you made a bracha achrona on such drinking. That is what some of the Sfardisha achronim say. Rav Avad Yosef quotes this. He says he doesn't think it's a bracha levatala. He thinks you could rely on the Mishnah Berurah, but he doesn't recommend doing it. So what does he recommend? In source number Dalet and 7, Rav Avad Yosef, paskins for Svardim, that lichatchila, the best thing they should do is not make a bracha achrona on hot drinks. He says for tea, maybe it's different if you let it cool down, maybe you could drink tea fast, but coffee, he doesn't like that. Lichatchila, you should tell people not to do so if you're Svardi. If you're Ashkenazi, I get these emails once a week called Divrei Siach. It's from a guy in Bnei Brak who goes to talk to Rav Chaim Kanievsky and then writes everything that happened. So he quotes Rav Chaim Kanievsky, quoting from the Stipler, his father, that also held this way, that you just shouldn't make a bracha achrona on hot drinks. It's just not a drink that ever gets the chiva of a bracha achrona. The normal minhag, I think, is like the Mishnah Berurah, that a person should really drink normally and then leave over a little bit and drink it fast and make a bracha achrona based on that. That's what the Sefer Vizos HaBracha paskins. That is what Rav Willig has said in the past. And that seems to be somewhat the normal minhag. But again, there are four, you know, at least in the achronim, viable options as to how to go about getting a bracha achrona or avoiding a bracha achrona when drinking hot drinks. So that is the first topic I wanted to discuss tonight. The idea of drinking hot drinks and making a bracha achrona. We discussed the minimum shear of a revius, what it is, 3.3 ounces. We said according to Rav Moshe, we discussed that that's not just a amount, it's also a time. A person has to drink in a certain amount of time. We discussed straws, and we also discussed Yom Kippur, where it really comes from, that you're not chayiv unless you drink in a certain amount of time. So too by brachos, you're not chayiv in a bracha achrona. unless you drink in a certain amount of time. And we explained how so, if so, how is it possible to make a bracha achrona on your coffee? Either it's not, or there were three options as to how to go about getting a bracha achrona on your coffee, and a person should ask, I guess, their mor hara, exactly how to go about that. But what about the topic of the shir? May America run on Dunkin'? If you look closely in the heading, you will see that there are payas on that Dunkin' Donuts man. It took me about an hour, so appreciate it. But just kidding, it didn't take that long, but still appreciate it. So what about that? What about taking your coffee on the go? If you want to take it to run, coffee is a drink you make in the morning, you go to your car, you go to the office, you go outside. How do you go about Hilchos Brachos on the run? The truth is, before we get to Hilchos Brachos, you have to figure out how you eat on the run. If you look in source number 8, the Gemara in Kedushin on Daf Mem has some very scary words for a person who eats out in public. The Gemara says, Ha'ochel Bashuk, someone who eats in public, in the marketplace, Hariz Adome Lekelev, he's similar to a dog. V'yesh Omrim, there are those who say, Pasul le'edus. He is not allowed to give edus. And the Gemara says, Halacha ki yesh omrim. The Gemara says, the halacha is that such a person is pasul le'edus. I was once only an aid kedushin at a wedding, and the chassan told me before, please don't eat at the shmorg, because there's a lot of people there, and you're going to be eating in public, and maybe you'll be pasul le'edus. So when I told that to Rav Tursky, he told me he thinks the chassan owes me a meal. But why is that true? Seemingly, shmorg's good, yeah. He said, seemingly, did tshuva since then. It's Yom Kippur. So either way, the Gemara has some scary words over here, some choice words for a person who eats out in public. It's not such a good thing to do. In fact, this I have to give credit to Rabbi Isaac Rice from Shul in the neighborhood. He pointed this out to me a couple years ago, that Rav Menashe Klein has a whole series of tshuvas in his Sefer Mishnah Halachos in Chelek Tesvav about eating pizza. Different tshuvas about eating pizza. Sounds like too much free time, but okay. So he says a lot of tshuvas about that. So he says there that if a person is the type of person that eats sandwiches in public, he stands on a stand outside in the street and he eats his sandwiches, so he really would be pasul le'edus. And he goes further in the next tshuva and says, if someone eats at what are called smorgasbord, that's what he writes, then the person should also seemingly be pasul le'edus. If you are the Masada Kedushin, says Rav Menashe Klein, don't call that person up as an aide. Thank God, most of us probably won't be inside the condition, although you should watch out for this if you have any other cases where it comes up. But Rav Zilberstein has a little piece in Chashuke Chemed in Maseches Brachos where he says this is not the case in a couple of places. The Rambam writes, when he quotes this din, he says, people who are holchim ve'ochlim bashuk, people who walk and eat outside in public, those people are pasul le'edus. He does quote the din, but he says it's different. It's not when a person eats and there are people around. That's not what it means. It's also, you have to talk about what exactly it means to be in public. 600,000 people, 3 people, 10 people, what does it mean? But anyways, a person's walking and eating, says the Rambam, then he's pasul le'edus. Says Rav Zilberstein, if he wants to eat at a sidewalk cafe, he wants to eat at a table like a mensch outside, and there's 100 people walking by every minute, that's not an issue. You're not pasul le'edus in that way. You're probably not even dom le'kelev, hopefully, at least not because of that. That's what Rav Zilberstein says. And he says the same thing is true about eating on a bus. A person wants to take his sandwich on the bus, not as much of an issue as walking and eating. Even if we don't take these makoros so seriously, even if we're not so intense as Rav Menashe Klein wants to be, as some others want to be, even if that's true, we should realize that these are important things just in terms of midos. A person should know how to eat like a mensch, how to act like a mensch, how to walk like a mensch, how to do all these things like a normal person. As Rav Menashe Klein points out, and I think this is a good point, the fact that most of New York City eats on the run is not a proof that it's okay. It might be okay for a different reason, but it's not a proof from what you see in public. We have to learn how to eat like good Jewish people, like good menschen, and even if we don't say that I shouldn't have been an aide at that wedding, but we should take these messages to heart. But anyways, eating on the go, hopefully we'll get around that. Hopefully we'll find ways to eat on the go. What about making brachos on the go? So before we even get to that, we still have to figure out one more thing. Brachos on the go does not mean that you can make brachos on the go. We're talking about brachos on food that you take while you're eating. But the bracha cannot be said on the go. The Shulchan Aruch says in Kuf Tzadi Aleph Gimel, source number 9, the Shulchan Aruch says a person can't do any malacha when he's making a bracha. The Magen Avram says even the slightest malacha, that would mean the Magen Avram does not say this because he did not have this, but otherwise he would have talked a lot more about half Shabbos. But he says you can't text when you're making a bracha, you can't fold your laundry when you're making a bracha, you can't brush up the breadcrumbs on the table when you're making a bracha. A bracha is between you and a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Close your eyes, pay attention, make a bracha, don't do anything else while you're making that bracha. The Be'er Halacha says if you did so, you'd still be Yotzei, you wouldn't make another bracha, but it was Aser, you weren't allowed to do such a thing.
So if you were in your car and wanted to
eat, yeah,
you
yeah.
Have to do pull over to the side.
Here we go, so let's talk about that actually right now. So someone asked that question to Shlomo Zalman Auerbach once. Someone said, if I'm driving my car, not sitting in the car, driving my car, so maybe a little different, but I'm driving the car, I'm turning the steering wheel, I got, you know, I'm paying attention to the road, and I want to eat the pretzels next to me. It's a long drive, I want to drink my drink, whatever it is. Can I make a bracha while I'm driving, or is it usher because of this Shulchan Aruch? So what Rav Shlomo Zalman answered, he wants to know if it's us to make a bracha while driving. Of course it's us to make a bracha while driving. Sakanas nefashos. How could he focus on driving when he has all that kavana? That's what Rav Shlomo Zalman answered. So when I read that story, the first thing I thought is that based on the question and based on the answer, I do not have enough kavana when I make brachos. I never would have thought to ask that it's a problem not kavana if I'm driving while I'm making a bracha, and I certainly don't have kavana enough to crash my car. But Rav Shlomo Zalman said that that's really what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be focusing so much that you wouldn't even be able to focus on driving. So says Rav Shlomo Zalman, the question is really, it's a moot point. There's no reason to discuss the question. It's usher to make that bracha while driving for a totally different reason, because it's a sakanas nefashos. Okay, cute story. Either way, making brachos on the run is not in the question over here. What we're really talking about is eating on the run. If you make a bracha in one place, does it cover you in other places? So this is a whole list of complicated dinim. When you make a bracha in one place and you go to another place, it's all mostly in Shulchan Aruch Siman Kuf Ayin Ches. Source number 10 is the Mishnah Berurah there, but in the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah, there's a long Shulchan Aruch with a long Ramah about Shinui Makom, about changing your place. You make a bracha in one place, you walk to another place. Is that considered that you had Hesach Hadas, you had a break from your original bracha, you have to make a new bracha? If you go back to your old place, you have to make a new bracha. A lot of complicated cases, a lot of different permutations you can really have. Let's basically say three basic rules in one gray area. Three basic rules. In Kuf Ayin Ches Sif Alef, in the Shulchan Aruch, not in the sheet, okay? If you are in one room, but you go from corner to corner, I make my shakel over here, and then I walk over there and drink my drink more, says the Shulchan Aruch, not an issue. You're in the same room, no big deal. Says the Mishnah Berurah, this is on the sheet in source number 10, that even if it's a huge room, you're at a wedding, and there's an orchestra between you and where you originally ate, so you're in that corner and that corner, but there's a 10-piece band. Is that a lot? There's a 10-piece band in the middle with a trombone. That seems like a big hefsek. You can't see where you originally started. Says the Mishnah Berurah, you still don't make a new bracha when you switch places within one room. One room is always one bracha. What if you're in one house but you go from room to room? That too, the Mishnah Berurah says, even if you go from downstairs to upstairs, you don't make a new bracha in the new place. It's all covered when you're in the same house. If you go from bias to bias, if you go from house to house, that is a problem. If I make my shahakal on my coffee in my home and then I walk to my neighbor's home, or I walk 2 hours down, wherever it is, and I want to continue drinking my coffee, I would probably need a new bracha. Even if I had in mind to go there, it gets a little complicated when you live in an apartment complex, because maybe all the building, all the homes, apartments, are all one ownership, one domain. But basically, if you go from house to house or building to building, you would need new brachas. The gray area is as follows. Let's say I go to a coffee shop, I order my coffee, and I start to drink it on the street, waiting for a bus, or I'm in the parking lot. Make my shakel, start to drink, and then I decide, okay, let's go. I got to go to work, get on the bus, get in the car. I've changed my place. I've gone from the street to the car. Do I now need a new bracha in the car? So says the Vizos HaBracha, that book on Hilchos Brachos, if you had it in mind from the beginning, no. It was all one process. You're Holchei Drachim. You're on the way. So when you made the bracha, you're on the way. And when you get in the car and you're on the way, and when you're eating the street, you're on the way. It's always considered like you're in the same process. You don't make a new bracha when you get into the car. The more sticky thing is if you're in a restaurant and you're drinking, and then you decide to go outside, or you had in mind from the beginning to then finish your meal outside in a different place. You started your coffee in Dunkin' Donuts, and then your ride came, so you left and kept drinking your coffee in the car. Do you need a new bracha in the car? So Bezalel Stern says you do. You can never get out of that issue because you left the building, you left the four walls and entered into another Rishus. Rav Moshe Feinstein in source number 11. I got a complaint from a listener online that I said Rav Moshe instead of Rav Moshe. Didn't even realize I said Rav Moshe. That's how cool I am. But anyway, so Rabbi Moses Feinstein says over here that is not the case. If a person has a normal routine, he makes his coffee in his house and he goes to the car and then he goes to the... if it's all part of the normal routine, so he's always holchei drachim, he's always on the way, and his original bracha will carry him through that car ride and from the door to the car and through the car ride. Rabbi Eliashiv takes that a step further and says, if you're in a car and you make a bracha and then you stop to pick something up and get back into the car, same thing. You're always in the same process. You're not really moving. In physics, you're moving. Or chemistry, whatever field of science that is. But in halacha, you're not moving. You're always in the same movement, the same single process of going to work or going to school or whatever you're doing. So you don't make a new bracha every step of the way. So those are some basic rules of shinui makom, some basic rules of taking your coffee on the go. If you make a bracha in one place, generally you should be careful not to walk to a different place, a totally different building. You're going to have real issues. You'll have to make a new bracha. You won't make another bracha chroni. You'll make a new bracha rishon and start again. And if you go back to your original place, you would as well. But if you have these funny cases where you're just normal processes to make the coffee, start it in the house, finish in the car, whatever it might be, then maybe you have room to talk about not needing a second bracha. But again, you have to figure out what the real halacha is. Here we just quote some names of people who say things. Good. The last thing that I wanted to touch, maybe we'll just say it briefly because we have a little time. I do. That the Gemara in Brachos on Mem Gimel says, that the Pasuk says, Kol ha'neshama tehalel ka, We say this in the morning, right? Kol neshama tahalaka, that all the neshamos, the souls, should bless Hashem. Says the Gemara, anything for which your neshama gets hana, anything for which your soul gets benefit from, you should make a bracha rishon, you should make a bracha on that hana. Says the Gemara, what does that refer to? Smells. If you smell something very nice, so you should make a bracha beforehand on that nice smell. We do this at Havdalah. Borei minei v'samim at Havdalah. We make a bracha on the smell we're about to get benefit from. That is a din in the Gemara to make a bracha on smells. What bracha do you make on what smells is quite complicated. It gets even more complicated when you get to synthetic materials like perfumes and the like. But if you look in source number 12, I tried to break it down just like without the Shulchan Aruch there. But in Shulchan Aruch, in Reish Tez Zayin, he breaks down for us most of the basic, five basic brachos on smells. If it's a smell of something that comes from a tree, you make a borei atzei b'samim. If it's a grass that gives you the smell, it's borei isfeg b'samim. If it's some other extract, the Mishnah Berurah says it comes from an animal or something, this maybe applies to perfumes, maybe applies to other things. You make a borei minei b'samim, because it's neither a plant nor a tree. If it's an edible fruit that's giving off the smell, then you would make barach hanosein reach tov baperos, and oils that are fragrant, borei shem and arev. So, says the Mishnah Berurah, what is an example of an edible fruit which you would make a bracha on its smell? What does the Mishnah Berurah say? Not here, not on the sheet, sorry. The Mishnah Berurah says, if you walked into your house, and you were drinking a coffee, and you smelled freshly roasted ground coffee in your cup, says the Mishnah Berurah, you would make barach hanosein reach tov baperos. You would make this bracha on the smell of the coffee because it's such a delicious aroma coming out of your drink, and the drink was made from an edible fruit, a coffee bean, so you'd make that bracha beforehand. Not so simple, yeah?
Not so simple. What about an esrog?
The Mishnah Berurah says his other example is esrog. Yeah, yeah. His other example.
But you're not going to be able to eat.
Ansuk is a little bit more of an issue, but yeah, yeah. But the Mishnah Berurah does say esrog. Cloves are discussed also. Shulchan Aruch, I think, thinks cloves should be borei nosin reach tov beperos, but really we say borei minei v'samim because we don't really distinguish from the smells, whatever. But it's complicated, but yeah, esrog is another example for sure. Coffee is also complicated just because some posts can point out that coffee is not really an edible fruit. No one eats the bean anymore, so does it really get that bracha? Maybe you should get a different bracha. Maybe you shouldn't get a bracha at all. But one interesting case that is talked about in the post game is as follows. Zilberstein has in his Sefer Aleinu L'Shabbach a discussion about the following case. If you wake up in the morning, you go out into your car and you go to Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts, whatever. You walk into the store and you just are overtaken by that powerful aroma of coffee, freshly roasted coffee being ground right in front of you, cooked right in front of you. It smells amazing. The whole store has that amazing smell. Do you make a bracha on the coffee that you're smelling at the moment? So in simple, it's simple. If you look in Shulchan Aruch in Source 13, in Siman Reish Yud Zayin, the Mishnah Berurah says, had that case, no? Ha'nichnas l'chanusel shaboksem. You walk into a store which sells perfumes, sells a smell of spices, and you smell those beautiful things. She'esh no minei b'samim. It has all those nice smelling things. Mevarich borei minei b'samim. He has the smell, so he makes the bracha. Very simple. But the Mishnah Berurah there points something out. The Mishnah Berurah says you only make the bracha of smells, of reach, the berachas reach, if you wanted to use this item just for smelling. Meaning, if you walk into the perfume store to smell the perfumes, because it would give you a chizuk, because it would give you excitement to smell the beautiful smells that are going on in the store, so then you would make a bracha. But if you walked into a store to buy a bagel, or you walked in the store even to buy some other item, maybe even it's coffee, you didn't walk in to smell anything, so then just because you smell something doesn't mean you now make a bracha. That's what the Mishnah Berurah says, and because of that, Rav Zilberstein says maybe you would not make a bracha in that case. Like we said before, anyways, maybe you shouldn't make a bracha on the coffee in the first place. I think most people don't do this, so there must be some reason we don't. There's a lot of sfeikos, suffik brachas lahaka. We don't want to make brachas levatala. But anyways, it is a discussion, something to be aware of, that there are many smells which a person would have to look into, would have to figure out if you would or would not make a bracha. Some of the poskim here bring up coffee, as we mentioned, for Svardim, who are listening here and worldwide, that Rav Avadya quotes this Mishnah Berurah and says it's okay to rely on, although the Kaf HaChaim disagrees, does not want you to make a bracha on coffee if you smell the coffee. Rav Avadya says it is okay, but he doesn't recommend it. But that is the topic of making a bracha on the smell. So we discussed a lot tonight. We discussed the bracha rishona and the bracha achrona, how much you have to eat in order to be chayav in a bracha rishona, bracha achrona, how fast you have to drink it, and we discussed the difference between cold drinks and hot drinks. We also discussed shinui makom, transferring places after you've made a bracha, not eating on the go, not making brachas on the go, maybe eating on the go. And we ended with a little bit of a discussion about Berachas HaReach. We are now out of the thick of things in terms of Hilchos Brachos, and Amir Tzashem B'li Nether, next week we will continue in topics of coffee-related in Yanim. I don't know what the shir will be on yet, but until then, everyone have a wonderful week.